WXXI.
This is Lori Halen from Tompkins Financial Advisors, and here's what's happening on Wall Street today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is at 16,678, up 61. The NASDAQ is at 4,223, up 38. And the S&P 500 is at 1,909, up 9. Checking stocks of local interest, Constellation Brands, 8,356, up $1.05. Corning, 2,150, up 17 cents. Gannett, 2,784, down 19 cents. Harris, 77.30, up 55 cents. Home Properties, 61.71, up 25 cents. IBM, 184.29, down $1.66. Paychex, 41.04, up 22 cents. M&T Bank, 121.81, up 64 cents. Tompkins Financial, 46.83, up 95 cents. Xerox, 12.14, up 6 cents. Again, on Wall Street right now, the Dow Jones is up 61 points, and the NASDAQ is up 37 points. This has been Lori Halen from Tompkins Financial Advisors.
...is provided by the estate of Teresa Marie Feller.
From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1976 in Wake County, North Carolina. For years, the county schools there had been largely white, and the Raleigh City schools were largely minority. In 1976, a merger would bring them together, creating one large county district. One of the earliest supporters of a merged school district was the local business community, which worried that so-called white flight was hurting the region's economy by concentrating poverty in an urban center. In 1973, residents had rejected the proposal to merge by a 3-to-1 vote, but North Carolina state government forced the merger in 1976, and since then, Wake County has become widely praised for its integration and student success. But can that model travel? Are there lessons to learn? For example, could Monroe County realistically expect to duplicate the results if Monroe County turned 19 school districts into one? That's just one of the questions that a recent delegation took to Raleigh. They traveled from Rochester hoping to learn more about how the Wake County district works and what we might learn from their structure. Joining us in studio are three of the 11 members who were on that recent delegation. It's Larry Marks, the executive director of the Rochester Children's Agenda. Larry, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Evan. Thanks.
Beth Laidlaw is with Urban Presbyterians. She's a philosophy professor at MCC, but Urban Presbyterians is the group locally. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having us.
And also, under the umbrella of Urban Presbyterians, is Don Pryor. Now, you might know Don from the Center for Governmental Research, but on this particular trip, his hat said Urban Presbyterians, right, Don?
It is correct.
And Beth, tell us real briefly what Urban Presbyterians is.
So about 6 years ago, a couple of city pastors, John Wilkinson and Judy Lee Hay, recognized that there was opportunity in 10 Presbyterian churches within the city of Rochester. They have nourished that partnership in a number of ways. I facilitate the Urban Education Group of Urban Presbyterians. We have two directions. We meet immediate needs of the city school district's children through tutoring. We've tutored for 25 years. We also advocate for change. We recently advocated for the hiring of a social worker in every city school. We also provide support in terms of material goods to individual schools. The other half of the Urban Education Group addresses systemic change. So we've been on a 5-year journey investigating the question of how we could make our city school district better, how we could wrap our arms around the children of the city of Rochester. And that journey took us a lot of places, took us to Syracuse to talk to Jerry Grant, who wrote a book about a comparison of Raleigh and Syracuse. It also took us to Raleigh, North Carolina. We took 11 community leaders down there last month.
Okay, so the group went down there last month, and the point was not to go down and say Wake County, North Carolina integrated and merged all their school districts, and now they have one large countywide district. Let's learn how they did it and bring it right back to Rochester. That wasn't necessarily the point. But there was at least the question of whether some of the lessons can travel. And so Larry Marks from the Rochester Children's Agenda, before we even discuss more about the mission of your trip, I want to know what you say to parents who have already told us this morning in anticipation of this conversation that a countywide school district will never happen here. They say it's a waste of time to even go down this path to talk about that. What do you say to that?
Well, we're not interested in tilting at windmills. And we're also not interested in saying that any one means to an end is the answer. We're interested in looking at the ends first, which would be great schools for all kids, not just for some of our kids, but for all kids. And therefore, from that end, what are the various means that could get us there? And it was in that spirit of inquiry that we went to Raleigh to look at economic integration. And there's very good research and evidence that points out that if you have children who are in very high poverty schools, they do about as best as the lowest poverty person would do. But if you mix it up so that no more than 40% of the kids are coming from high poverty backgrounds in a given school, then the chances are that even those low-income kids do as well as the general population of the school.
Without having a negative impact on the more affluent students. I think that's part of the key part of the equation that we were attracted by in the Raleigh area.
Well, and that is a huge part of the conversation, Don, because when you have any conversation that brings up the notion of merging government services, but especially schools, merging school districts, you've got parents who will say, I like my district. I don't want my child to have to take a bus to the city or have bring in kids from other areas. I like where we are. I'm living here because we chose it. We're very specifically not looking to injure my child's education. What you're saying is the evidence over decades from Raleigh indicates that while the impoverished children see their performance and their quality of education go up, the wealthier kids, and often the rich white kids, are not negatively impacted.
That's correct. And I think we have evidence of that not just from Raleigh, but there are other national studies that have been done that suggest this is not just a Raleigh experience. They may have kind of perfected it in some ways, but we believe that the research is pretty clear that you can have this raising the boats for low-income kids without it having a negative impact. And in fact, one of the indicators we've looked at, obviously, is graduation rates. And the most recent graduation rates we've seen from 2013 out of Raleigh was about 70%, close to 70% of blacks and Hispanics and of low-income students graduate on time. Contrast that to 45% or so of all students in the city school district, and even lower rates for black males, for example, here in Rochester. I think it's indicative of what we see as some of the potential promise there. Falls short. We're not talking about a countywide school district necessarily, but we believe there are a number of other things that we brought back from Raleigh, other things that they've done, pieces of the equation that we believe potentially could help here and have the positive impacts that we've seen in Raleigh and elsewhere.
All right, so we're going to be getting into all of those things in this hour. What I want to do is at least lay some groundwork to help our listeners understand what exactly they did. We kind of gave you some general notion of it, but in 1976, they took two districts and turned it into one, a countywide district that, again, was largely white, largely suburban, a city school district in Raleigh that was largely minority. It became one, a large district, and they had rules. And my understanding is, and maybe Beth, you can help me with the rules.
Sure.
Here. They wanted to establish a baseline that no more than 40% of kids could in one school could be free or reduced lunch?
Correct. They actually evolved this strategy over 30 years.
Okay.
So the first thing they did was merge schools, and that they didn't find the success they wanted in that move alone.
Just to merge it, okay.
So then looking at research, they decided to implement an economic diversity program so that no building would have more than 40% of its students qualifying for free or reduced price lunch. They learned after instituting that policy, they had dramatic increase in performance, but they learned that they were being too rigid with the policy, that moving kids at the end of the year to really fine-tune what percentage of students free or reduced price lunch were in a building, that got to be cumbersome. So they evolved other strategies. They created 27 magnet schools in 1 year. 5 years after that, they set a 95% achievement goal for elementary schools. Once they achieved that goal, they set a 95% achievement goal for middle schools, and then down the road for high schools. So the story of Raleigh is really 40 years of urgent attention by community leaders to what the current situation presented in the needs of students. That's really the lesson that we're hoping to bring back to Rochester.
And we're going to get to some of the bigger critiques or concerns that parents have. But are you saying, Beth, don't we still see a lot of reshuffling of students at the end of the years to sort of meet that 40% threshold?
In Raleigh?
Yes.
Their current conception of school buildings, they talk about healthy schools. So they look at the economic diversity in a building. They look at, in terms of magnet schools, what the needs are. I toured an elementary magnet school that was an IB program based in language, Spanish. So instruction was given in Spanish each day. So our English language learning students, who we look here as students in need, are seen as assets in those buildings of a Spanish-based programming. So they want to balance those assets as well. So when we talk about how they assign students to buildings in Raleigh, economic diversity is a key factor, but it isn't the only factor.
One of the things that they've added to that equation is the whole question of stability, so that because there were some real problems with students being shifted at the end of a year to achieve the economic stability, but at the same time it meant that individual kids were moving from school to school from year to year, and that clearly was a red flag for a lot of parents for understandable reasons. So one of the things that they've done is, as Beth talked about, this gradual evolution of the design there is to build in assurances that once a student is in a given school, let's say a given elementary school, he or she would be there, if he or she comes in the first or second grade, would be there for the rest of the elementary years and wouldn't be shifted from year to year to meet the racial quota. So there's been some balancing that they've had to do there, and it's an ongoing kind of work of art. It's not
a
complete science, but they seem to have made it work pretty well overall.
And I think it's important to say too that no place is nirvana, and Raleigh isn't either. It's not as though they're problem free. Now, would we prefer the problems of Raleigh, North Carolina, to the problems of the Rochester City School District or education in our area generally? I think the answer would be yes.
Yeah. We're talking to three guests who are part of a delegation of 11 people from the Rochester area who went down last month to Wake County, North Carolina. That's Raleigh, North Carolina, but it's one large county school district that comprises, by last count, 158 public schools, roughly right around there in the system. Mm-hmm. So 100, just over 100 elementary schools. Something along those lines, but again, it's a countywide school district that is integrated and that has been so since 1976. And this delegation from Rochester wanted to know, what are the lessons that we might learn, and instead of not just duplicating exactly what they're doing, but are there certain things that we can say, hey, that looks like it works. Do we want to try that here? Can we bring it back to Rochester? Larry Marks was part of that group. He's the executive director of the Rochester Children's Agenda. And from the Urban Presbyterians group, Beth Laidlaw and Don Pryor were part of that group. They're with us in studio now. And we're going to be taking your feedback as well. We're already getting a lot of feedback online on our Twitter and Facebook pages, and you got a chance to offer your thoughts there. You can also call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or you can call us at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And again, the toll-free number, because I actually had a few people say, I'm a Rochester transplant in Wake County, and they're listening online. Yeah. If you do want to join the conversation, 844-295-TALK, if you want to jump in here. Let's grab one quick phone call, and we'll continue. Bernard, Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Thank you. It seems to me, I appreciate the intellectual conversation that we're having here, but it seems to me we go back to basics, integration versus segregation. And there in the United States, we don't support segregation. I don't care what your grade levels are and how you... So it just seems to me that we need to integrate, and by the way, it can help the school system, but it needs to be the goal. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bernard.
I mean, I think what we would say is that clearly we have an economic, a moral, and an academic imperative to change the current educational system for the better. Economically, Raleigh has proven that it can drive a strategy of tremendous growth. They have a problem of adding around 3,000 new students a year to that school district because of the influx of population. We would love to have that kind of problem. On a moral level, it's really clear that just writing off whole populations of kids to futures that aren't releasing their potential, aren't adding their value to the economy is horrible. And academically, it's clear that there are better ways to organize school systems and organize schools to achieve better outcomes for kids.
With regard to segregation, we didn't get here by accident, and Raleigh didn't get to where they are without leaders making really concerted choices. In our case, we had waves of immigration coming into the city in the middle of the last century, and the only affordable housing was the middle of the city where people live. At the same time, we had this huge wave of folks moving from the city to the suburbs. So that set the stage for the segregated schools that we have now. And it's really, in my mind, an important piece of the story is to understand how Rochester ended up the way it is. I moved to the suburbs in the middle of the 1980s. I since then have moved back into the city. But my move to the suburbs was about finding a good education and a wonderful neighborhood. We learned in Raleigh that when they made premier high schools downtown, they were able to have business and real estate development in particular follow those amazing schools in the downtown area.
Now, when it comes to the differences, there are, as you have all pointed out so far, significant differences between Monroe County, for example, or even surrounding areas. I mean, we've got listeners all the way toward Buffalo and Ithaca, et cetera. Well, it doesn't matter if it's Monroe County or beyond. It's wherever you are, it's not exactly Wake County, right? And Wake County integrated and merged two districts. Take Monroe County. 19 public school districts. Home rule is very popular here. That's one reason why parents told us this morning, this will be very interesting and it will never happen here. In 2003, there was a county executive race between Maggie Brooks, who won it, and Bill Johnson, the mayor of Rochester. And Mayor Johnson was talking about some consolidated services. In some ways he was speaking specifically, in some ways he was speaking more generally. Ms. Brooks put out an ad that became known as the Pac-Man ad, and it showed the center city gobbling up the suburbs and essentially said, you don't want this to happen. You know, don't let the suburbs get gobbled up by a troublesome inner core. And it worked. It was very effective. And that has lingered, that notion. So is there any sense that even if you can come back from Wake and say, look at what they've done, they only had to have two districts merge, not 19, right?
But it seems to me there's a couple things in what you just said, Evan. One is that it will never happen here. What is the it? Again, we aren't necessarily coming back here and saying the only solution is a countywide school district. Realistically, the politics don't support that, and we aren't coming back waving the flag for that solution. What we believe is that there are a number of other pieces of solutions that we did learn about in Raleigh, whether it's magnet schools or the socioeconomic mix or various pieces that we might be able to do that will create such a great school environment that kids will want to be part and parents will want to be part of that. Even a student in Pittsford, there may be some things that the Pittsford School District isn't able to offer that a leadership magnet school, for example, could offer, that some parents in Pittsford, as well as parents in the city, might profit from and might be interested to have that option on the table. So I think that's what we're really talking about, not so much a single monolithic solution, but a variety of possible bits and pieces, little pieces of a foundation that we can begin to put together that creates more options so that we aren't castigating people in the city just because they happen to live in the city into a terrible set of academic outcomes.
You know, it's also the case, I think, to be a little bit more challenging, that history is not destiny. And that if you were a betting man in 1954, before the Supreme Court decision, you would have said, the law says segregation is okay. The facts on the ground are segregated schools are always going to be here. Now, unfortunately, we have increasingly segregated schools despite what the law says. But there are, as Raleigh has shown, ways of overcoming that. And there are models that could make sure that just because of what existed in the past, that's not a predictor necessarily of what can happen in the future.
And Beth, you have said that, yes, that for example, we talked about the Pac-Man ad from 2003, that for a certain population locally, that has had sort of an indelible impact. But not everybody.
Right. If you're a middle-aged white woman like me, that image will resonate with you. If you are a young family attracted to the South Wedge with your kids at school 12 in the city, looking to build a vibrant urban core, that image might not, you might not even know what Pac-Man is.
Okay.
It may also be worth adding, there's sort of almost a reverse way of looking at that Pac-Man analogy of the city gobbling up the suburbs. There's an equally plausible scenario in which the city deteriorating, continuing to deteriorate, potentially sucks the whole county down the drain. Because if we don't have a strong urban core, both in terms of what that means societally, but also in terms of what it means for our future workforce, then as a community, we all suffer. So we may say the city and the suburbs are separate and distinct, and what we do in one doesn't have to interact with the other, but it really does. The reality is this community is going to sink or swim on how we deal with things as a community. Doesn't mean we have to have a countywide school district, but we really need to be looking at solutions that cut across district lines if we hope to survive as a community.
Go ahead.
To underscore that, every person we spoke with in Raleigh, every person had a foundational belief that all children matter and all children can learn. Whether we were talking with the mayor from 30 years ago or the current board chair or someone from the suburbs, every person had that foundational belief. And so if there is one lesson for us to bring back from Raleigh is that we need to get out of our silos, whether that silo be a school district or a nonprofit agency or a higher education learning institution. We need all to get out of our silos.
And interestingly enough, that's one of the reasons I wanted to start the hour on the point that it wasn't in the 1970s a case in Wake County where you had an urban core that said, hey, let's do a countywide district. The business community there recognized that if you have a deteriorating urban core, poor business community, poor schools, it hurts everybody. And they were one of the big drivers of this merger. So interestingly enough, now you've got, as our guests have said, thousands of suburban students in Wake County are bused to magnet schools in poorer areas. And likewise, low-income students are bused to suburban areas to help maintain some of that balance. Well, one of the big questions we have from parents already, and maybe I can grab a couple, I've tried to print several, comes from the notion of busing. And Eva writes to us, some of the rural schools in Virginia, where I moved to Rochester from, do this. There are some cool things about it, but a lot of negatives. The buses have to start so early. Some kids get picked up on the bus as early as 5:30 in the morning because their routes have to go way out to the far ends of the county to get all the kids. It's great for athletes who may want to play for a team they might not necessarily have access to if they live in a different part of the county, but really rough on parents and rough on students to be on the bus that long. What is it like in Wake County?
So we're in the fall, we're bringing folks from Raleigh up to help us learn more about their experience. One thing they've done is they've developed hubs in their transportation system so that if you're going from the northeast part of the county to the southwest part of the county, they have streamlined that ride so that it would be no longer than my daughter rides going from my house to Soda every morning. So, you know, they have a lot of really geeky people who think about how to make this work, and we want to learn from them.
And I think it's safe to say school assignment in any school district is always a hot button issue, where my kids get to go and where they don't get to go and how my preferences are met versus other parents' preferences are met. So there's always going to be an irreducible tension when it comes to school assignment, and in this case, the length of travel can matter a lot. But what you get and what we heard when we were down in Raleigh were people speaking quite passionately about the experience of the school and the fact that it was worth it. Whatever the family was doing in order to accommodate its choice around school and its preference for instance a magnet was worth it.
And I think the other thing that we heard there was that not only were people being bused for the purposes of integration and getting to the magnet schools, but that most of that busing was already occurring. Most people, there was some level of busing already happening, just as many kids, both in the city and suburbs here, are bused. And so what we heard there was that really only about 2% of all the students are bused for integration purposes or for the balancing economically. So that's not trivial, but the point is it is a relatively small proportion. And again, remember, most of this is a voluntary system. People are making voluntary choices to go to these great schools, these improved schools. This is not a court-ordered busing right. scheme, as you often hear about.
I know our mayor is really putting an emphasis on parental choice when it comes to where their kids go to school. And I have every confidence in being able to say in Raleigh, North Carolina, it is parental choice that is driving where kids go to school. They want to be in those downtown premier high schools and middle schools and elementary schools because that is where they see getting the best education.
I want to dive more into whether this is really working for, especially for the poorest kids. I see some conflicting numbers when it comes to test results and whatnot. We're going to get to that in a moment. I want to learn more about where this delegation exactly, who they met with. But before we jump back into that, let's grab another call. Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes, hi. This, of course, is a very complicated issue, as I'm sure you know. So I think it deserves a discussion on the part of people that I've talked to who are Black and who have a different perspective, not that they don't want people to kind of quote-unquote get along, but there's a long history here of racism, and there's a big meeting on Saturday, community meeting on the racism thing, but there's still a huge gap. And what I've heard from people, progressive Black folks that I've talked to about this, is that and there's a wonderful article, by the way, that El Politico did recently, and also locally, Howard Eagle is wonderful in writing about this. And one of the things that both of those point out is that why should Black people keep hoping or putting whatever thoughts into, somehow white people will accept us after all these years and after the housing inequities and all these economic inequities. So a lot of the folks think, wait a minute, I don't have to run my life on the fact that some white folks want to do this. And really, you were talking about who's going to gobble up who. I think a lot of people are afraid of, the gentrification issue has taken hold a lot in cities, usually bigger cities. But so I think it's kind of the reverse sometimes. And so one of the things is, what concretely, even if nobody moved anywhere or there are no schools that were changed, racism, what is going to happen concretely? Are white folks going to start acknowledging the history of racism, not that they're personally responsible, but that collectively? Are they going to say things like, what's been recommended is there's no professional training for teachers that's required now on racism. Now, I'm not talking about diversity. I'm talking about racism. There's nothing. What are the concrete things that are going to happen to deal with racism honestly, openly, people examining their own thoughts, their own individual hang-ups, versus just saying, let's all kind of get together some common place and it'll happen automatically? Because it will not happen. And a lot of Black folks have said, I'm going to, use a word here, the hell with you. I'm going to not waste my whole life continuing to try to figure out how to please you, how you want me. I don't feel wanted. I hear that a lot. I don't want to go to a suburban area because I don't feel like I'm accepted there.
All right, well,
and that's a real feeling.
Bonnie, thank you for the call. I think that she brings up a lot of important points here. And let me at least sort of frame the one question on what's going to be done about racism. Part of the discussion in Wake County, and my guess is part of the discussion in any scenario where you've got a largely white suburban school district setup and a largely minority urban setup, is that kids in suburbs may not see a whole lot of diversity day to day. And that, I understand Bonnie's point that if you don't actually talk about it or deal with it in some way, maybe it doesn't really move people, but I have to think that it would have to have an impact on kids who would otherwise be going to 99% white or 97% white. All of a sudden, when there's more diversity, doesn't there have to be an impact? Am I wrong, Beth?
There's a huge, I can only speak for what I saw in Raleigh and the choices that they made in Raleigh. I toured an elementary school and talked with a number of parents after school one day, and one of the parents is a real estate developer. His kid was in April, so they'd been in school since September. His son's birthday party was approaching, and his son had been talking about his best friend Jason all year long. And his dad had never met Jason, but thought Jason would probably be coming to the birthday party. So this white real estate developer asked his son, so, you know, is Jason black or white? And his son just sat there for a while because he didn't really know whether Jason was black or white. So, you know, the importance of generational divide in this issue, I think, cannot be overestimated. Folks my age and older get very alarmist at the idea of the wonderful diversity we could bring to schools. But I think folks, you know, a couple generations coming up, it's really not that big a deal. We just see the promise.
Yeah, I want to applaud the caller for bringing up racism and race. And it the one way you don't deal with racism is by ignoring it as an issue. And one of the ways I believe we ignore it as an issue is to consign whole populations of children to bad educational outcomes and not do anything about it, particularly when you see the literal riches of educational opportunities in some of the suburbs that are available to white kids. So we hope to change the conversation a little bit, just as the caller alluded to Facing Race, Embracing Equity meeting this weekend. We hope to be part of that changing conversation about race and racism in our community in an educational context.
We're going to take a short break and going to come back and talk about what's going on in Wake County now and who else our delegation met with and what they bring back to Rochester from that recent delegation there. The Tea Party has been actively involved in the school board there. You might have seen that in the national news, and there was the question on whether Wake County is sort of going away from the 1976 merger and some of the changes they made over the last several decades. So we're going to learn more about what they learned in Wake County, what we might apply here in Rochester, Monroe County, and beyond, or not. Do you think it's an unfair idea to parents in suburban districts? Is it unfair to parents who've chosen specific places just to make sure their kids have the schools that they want? All of that on the table as we continue on Member Supported Public Radio. Coming up in our second hour, who is Ukraine's new president? He's known as the Chocolate King, but now he has to become a serious political leader. Can he handle the heat from Putin and Russia? Will he lean toward the European Union? And is the conflict finally subsiding? We have two guests who can answer those questions and more as we seek to understand Ukraine, coming up in our second hour.
Wonder how art is valued?
And you spend 5 minutes looking at the artwork, and you spend 25 minutes being told the backstory to the artwork.
I'm David Gura, the business behind art, next time on Marketplace from APM.
This evening at 6:30.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Larry Marks is here, the executive director of the Rochester Children's Agenda. Don Pryor and Beth Laidlaw are both here from Urban Presbyterians. They were part of that 11-person group that went down to Raleigh, North Carolina. It's the Wake County School District that has become, in many ways, sort of a nationally studied and kind of a national model for merging a countywide school district and taking down some barriers of municipalities and having kids go to school together, essentially. In Wake County, there's kind of a 40% line, but they don't want any one school to have more than 40% of kids on reduced and free lunch. And that means that, yes, some kids from the poorer neighborhoods are bused to suburbs. Some kids from suburbs are bused to poorer neighborhoods. And there are a lot of magnet schools. There's been a lot of evolution in terms of what's happening there. I want to know exactly how this delegation scheduled the trip here, and we could do just an hour on that. But give me a quick, I'll start with Larry, quick snapshot on who you wanted to meet with to make sure you're getting everything. Because let's face it, in recent years, even in Wake County, no one thinks it's perfect there. The Tea Party took control of the school board a few years back. They wanted to kind of scrap a lot of these things. So who did you want to meet with and what did you learn?
Well, first of all, maybe just a little origin perspective in that the Urban Presbyterians Together Group, 10 city churches, did spearhead this effort, applied from a grant from the Rochester Area Community Foundation, which they granted to go and check out exactly what lessons we could learn from the Raleigh, North Carolina experience. Then there was a workshop at last year's September Grad Nation Summit, which was sponsored by America's Promise nationally, staffed by the Community Foundation locally, and included the Rock the Future effort locally as part of the event. And in that conference, where several hundred people came, there was a workshop on metro solutions that included Jim Lawrence from the Democrat and Chronicle, Kara Finnegan, a professor from the Warner School of Education at University of Rochester, Brian Hetherington from Empire Justice. And literally, we kept adding chairs and adding chairs. I was just a workshop participant, but it overflowed. And in the course of that conversation, there was huge interest generated about what are some other ways to look at the problems that we face, not just on an individual school level or at a child level. We understand that kids and classrooms and schools can escape the effects of poverty, but what about whole districts? What about systems and whole populations of kids? And so that gave more impetus to a group of us to want to visit North Carolina. Those of us who read the Gerald Grant book were profoundly affected by the contrast between Syracuse and Wake County and wanted to check it out for ourselves. So when we went there, to answer your question, thanks to some incredible organizing by my colleagues here, Beth Laidlaw and Don Pryor and others, we met with former school superintendent Bill McNeil, who was the National Superintendent of the Year. We met with Tom Bradshaw, the former mayor of Raleigh, many former and current members of the Board of Education, really interesting conservative businessman, Bill Fletcher, who is both a former and current member of the Board of Education. We met with parents. We met with, as Beth said, we went into several schools. We met with reporters, even reporters, Evan. We decided to meet with them.
Well, that's nice of you.
And several business people from the Chamber of Commerce and elsewhere who were leaders in this effort, former elected officials of all stripes.
Yeah, because you can't just go and only meet with people who are going to tell you this is the greatest idea
right.
ever. What was the single biggest concern or common complaint that you heard, Beth?
In every school, we asked, tell us about the bad schools, name a bad school, we want to see a bad school, and at every turn came up with a blank, which shocked us. I mean, if you ask somebody in Rochester, can you name a bad school? I don't think
sure.
Down there, what we did learn is they never waste a good crisis. So you referenced the 2008-2009 Tea Party takeover of their school board. That was a galvanizing event in that community. It re-energized the earlier passion for public education. And out of that came an even stronger Raleigh community committed to building great schools for all.
And I think that included, the business community, as you referenced it, the faith community, civil rights community, urban parents, white suburban parents. This really was and is a broad community sort of consensus around the need for great schools for all kids. And they've had to work at that. But we were just really impressed with the breadth of and the depth of the exposure and the commitment to this kind of issue.
Now, before I get back to the callers, Keith and others, we are going to get to you. This is an important time to kind of go over whether this model is working for the most impoverished students. And when the Tea Party had success on the school board, they generated some national headlines by saying, look, here are the words of John Tedesco, one of the leading members of the Tea Party at the time. This is from 2011 in the Washington Post. He said that Wake County, North Carolina, is not Selma, Alabama of the 1960s. My life is already integrated. And he made the point that he said he doesn't think that this is actually helping impoverished people and impoverished neighborhoods. It was masking the problems by diluting it. Here are his words. John Tedesco emerged as the most vocal member of the new majority on the 9-member board, said he and his colleagues are only seeking a simpler system in which children attend the schools closest to them. If the result is a handful of high-poverty schools, Tedesco said perhaps that would better serve the most challenged students. Quote, if we had a school that was like 80% high poverty, the public would see the challenges, the need to make it successful. Right now we have diluted the problem so we can ignore it.
Yeah, no, diluting the problem is addressing the problem. I mean, again, the 1966 Coleman Report, which examined 600,000 students in 4,000 schools, concluded the social composition of the student body is more highly related to achievement, independent of the student's own social background, than is any other school factor, unquote. That's a pretty amazing conclusion. That's been that research finding has been repeated again and again. And there are interesting places like Montgomery County, Maryland, where you can compare within one county two different approaches to education. One is to freeze student populations, so high poverty schools that are given more resources than higher affluent schools to try to address the problems of poverty. Those schools performed worse. The outcomes of the students in those high poverty schools were less good than high poverty students that were in high affluent schools, where the peer group was 60% or more kids of better means.
So you dispute the notion that it just it masked the problems without solving them, essentially.
No,
that's not right.
That's incorrect.
Okay,
and if you look at Rochester, I mean, are we suggesting which is the 80% or 90% high poverty? Are we wanting to stand behind the results in our city schools?
Mr. Tedesco is implying that Rochester is a district that has such an obvious glaring need that the community would not tolerate it and would address it.
Well.
That's what he's implying.
Look at the evidence.
Okay, and so let's look at whether the students have improved there. And you mentioned the book by Jerry Grant. Gerald Grant, a Syracuse University professor, wrote a book called Hope and Despair in the American City, Why There Are No Bad Schools in Raleigh. And he was comparing Wake County School District to Syracuse, but the comparison is pretty easily shifted over to Rochester. And in his book, he says the research is very clear that having the right mix of kids socioeconomically, as Wake County does, has enormous benefits for poor kids without hurting rich kids. According to U.S. News and World Report, in 2005, 64% of low-income students in Wake County passed the state's end of high school exams, and that was significantly higher than the surrounding counties that do not have similar integration policies. However, test results among poor students continue to lag in some areas. For the 2007-2008 school year, only 18% of the district's schools met the adequate yearly progress of the No Child Left Behind Act, with only 71% passing state standardized tests. Now, we can probably get into whether standardized tests are fair there, but what does the evidence say? You were just there. Are more impoverished students doing better in Wake County than they are doing comparatively in Rochester or anywhere else?
Yes.
They are. They're doing better than their neighboring counties within North Carolina. They're doing way better than we experience in Rochester. And it's not just student performance. It's principal turnover rate is much lower in Wake County than in surrounding counties. And there are any number of measures that establish that outcomes for students in those schools are improved and sustained over the course of 30 years, which really is astounding.
When we met with Superintendent Jim Merrill, who's the current superintendent of the Wake County school system, he was bemoaning the fact that they've only managed to move over 6 years the high school graduation rate for economically disadvantaged students from 63% to 65%. So they hold themselves accountable to a higher standard because the overall Wake County graduation rate is 81%. Now, that said, would we prefer that problem? Don gave some of the other statistics. They still have a disparity, and there's also still a race-based disparity. In 1 year, the African-American graduation rate went from 67% up to 69%. So that's still below the 81% graduation rate. This is, again, according to Jim Merrill in our interview with him. That's still a clear and outrageous disparity that needs to be addressed by Wake County. Now, would we prefer that problem that they're having to ours? Yes.
I want to get to the phones again and try to get to some more of the questions we have from our listeners online as well. So let's do that now. Keith, Henrietta, go ahead.
I have an interesting program. I got several questions, and there's just one word answers and some comments. Is Toronto? I know Toronto has a municipal form of government. Do they have a municipal form of a school system, or is it more individualized what we have here? Would there be money saved to the school districts within Monroe County? Is the county the comparative one in North Carolina? I think you said, is that comparative to the same size as Monroe County? I could also see some flight from Monroe County, people moving just across the county line from Fairport to Victor. And somebody made a comment about, can you name a bad school? And I bet you there's anybody there could name a bad school. But can anybody name a good student from a bad school? And I'm sure you could find some really good students who are in poverty, in city schools, that do quite well. And I would be willing to bet each of your visitors today lunch off a glass plate that one of the common denominators between good students out of bad schools are parental involvement. Before you start having one giant school district called Monroe County, I think you should explore how to get parents or guardians more involved from day one, from kindergarten, in their child's education.
Keith, thanks very much. And we've got to try to keep it quick because we have a lot of listener feedback. How do you want to tackle that? Let me start with Beth. Go ahead.
Sure. Just to underscore that we are not advocating any specific solution. We are absolutely advocating that community leaders from all walks of life get together and talk about this. In response to Keith's question, there are 150,000 students in Wake County. There are 107,000 students in Monroe County. So, the numbers reveal that if they can do it, if they have figured this out by community leaders coming together under the banner of Great Schools for All, with 150,000 students, I think we can do that in this community for a smaller population.
She asked if there's money to be saved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the driving arguments for this. And one of the driving arguments for Wake County was to consolidate services and efficiencies and
reduction of taxes, reduction of transportation.
But you need to be careful. The biggest savings would be if you created a countywide school district. Short of that, the savings won't be as great. But again, it depends on the solutions. We're not advocating a specific thing. So the numbers would have to be developed based on specific kinds of solutions.
Okay, and before I get to Lisa in Pittsford, we're coming to you next, Lisa. I had another comment from Jennifer in Pittsford who said, she wrote in during this hour and said, I chose Pittsford because I wanted the best education for my 4-year-old son, and we will move out of the county if you make him go to Rochester schools.
So I can, you know, I'm perhaps unique, I don't know. I have two children who graduated from Webster Central Schools, and kudos to Schlegel Road School and Clem North, Willink and Spry, and Thomas High School. Incredible education. My youngest has gone to the city school district her entire life because she's a special needs student. She could not have gotten the education in the suburbs that she got in the city school district. So in my family, we have wonderful educational experiences, both suburban and urban.
But do you discount the fact that there are parents like Jennifer who wrote us and saying, I'm out of here. I'm not doing it.
And we aren't really talking about any mandatory system here. I think that's the key thing. We're not talking about displacing Jennifer or saying that she would have to be part of this. We're talking about creating more options for more people on a voluntary basis. We don't know exactly what those are all going to look like at this point.
We're at the beginning of this
process.
We're
at the very early stages, and one of the key things that's probably worth a quick saying quickly is we've lined up a whole bunch of people who want to meet with us now that we're back. We'll be meeting with the mayor, with superintendents of both the city and the suburban school district, school board members, Rochester Business Association, faith community people, and so on. There's politicians. You know, we will be meeting with those folks over the next couple of weeks just to begin the conversation, not with any solutions
not
in
to
mind,
tell them to
say,
you've got to do this,
but to say, can we start the conversation?
All right. Well, exactly. let's grab Lisa in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Lisa.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say thank you so much for this whole initiative. I think it's amazing that you've done this and are going down to the ground level, into the grassroots, and seeing where this has been successful so that we can have inject some reality into the conversation. Because ultimately, I think that this is the biggest issue, is being able to have this conversation and trying to be open-minded. You know, slavery didn't end, with a few voting cycles. It ended after decades of argument and debate and conversation and conscience and the idea that this was wrong and it needed to change. And I think that this, we have to address the key issue here. On so many levels, it's wrong that we have the system of education in Rochester as it is today. And I say this as a parent of four kids who have all gone through the Pittsburgh schools, started out in Rochester and moved to Pittsburgh for a variety of reasons. But I think that the conversation has to center on what we want for our kids and for our community, and what values do we share. You know, take race out of it for a second. Talk about this as we are all human beings, and we all have shared values and a desire for success for our families and for our community. And if we see in our system that we are guaranteeing a large portion of the community to be not successful, which costs them in human terms, it costs others in financial terms.
Lisa, and at that point, I got to jump in because we're going to run out of time here. I appreciate the call. Quick thoughts from our panel. We'll start here, Don. What do you think?
I would love to have an opportunity to talk further with Lisa, just in terms of the perspectives that she represents. If you're interested, Lisa, in following up on this, please get in touch with Evan, and he can get the information to us.
We'd love to
communicate and continue this discussion.
We can connect with you. Beth and Larry, last quick thoughts, 10 seconds each. What's next? What do you think, Beth?
We are meeting with every local group that will invite us, so please do invite us to come to your organization and share our story.
And Larry?
Great schools for all kids is the ends. The means we want to be agnostic about and look around. There are other school districts we also want to look at.
Thank you for taking the time. And guess what? We got through maybe a third of what I hoped to, which just means will you come back and talk about it?
Sure.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate you spending the hour with us talking about what we have learned from Wake County.
Thank you.
Next, we're trying to dive into Ukraine and understand the Ukrainian elections on Sunday. A couple of guests who will help us do that next on Connections.
This program is a production of WXXI Public Radio.